Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
Hunter Biden, the embattled son of our beloved president, failed in his efforts in court on Friday to have the gun charge against him thrown out. And this is really kind of interesting, and it's got a lot of different layers to it, and it really bears some discussion, because for folks who aren't particularly enamored with the Biden administration, and I would put myself in that group, but those of us who are passionate about gun rights, there's some interesting give and takes to this. There's some interesting interplay in how this is all ultimately going to work out. And it's fascinating to watch. And it's something that I've been trying to keep a close eye on. So first of all, what is Hunter Biden, Biden being prosecuted for? He's being prosecuted for the a violation of the federal law that says you may not lie when you go into a gun store and fill out the form. It's called a ATF form 4473. And if you've bought a gun in a gun store, you've filled one of these out. And it asks you several questions. I mean, after all the identifying information and whatnot, it asks you a series of questions. And they're essentially a list of the things that make you a prohibited possessor under federal law. For instance, it'll ask you if you've been convicted of a crime for which the maximum sentence was over a year. And that sounds complicated, but really what they're asking you is, do you have a felony conviction? Because that's how you define a felony. It's a crime for which the maximum sentence is over a year. And that can vary a little bit state to state. Some states have kept like their OWI or DUI, whatever you want to call it, those crimes have kept them labeled as misdemeanors, but they've raised the maximum sentence to up to 2 years in some states for the misdemeanor offense, like a first offense. And so anyway, the usual application of that definition is if you have a felony conviction. It asks you a series of other things. Do you have a domestic violence order or protection against you? And a whole series of other questions. One of the things it asks you is, are you a user of or addicted to any illegal drugs? And what's interesting is that it does not ask you if you're presently under the influence of drugs. It says, are you a user of or addicted to? So if you're a habitual drug user, even though you haven't used, for instance, that day, and you're not necessarily high at the moment, or you're not impaired in the driving sense, then you can still be tagged off base if you say no, because even though you haven't used that day, you are a user of or addicted to an illegal drug. And what's interesting is they've changed that question. I talk about this in my Indiana gun law class. They've changed that question now to say, to add a line that says, by the way, this includes marijuana, even if you're in a state where marijuana has been legalized. And why is that? And I've mentioned this here on the show before. It's because marijuana remains a controlled substance, in other words, an illegal drug at the federal level, according to the Controlled Substances Act of 1970. In fact, this is ludicrous. And as I always say when I'm talking about marijuana, this is not a hot button issue for me, because I learned all the way back in college, if not high school, that marijuana and I don't get along. We just don't get along. It makes me want to assume a fetal position and go to sleep. But it is an issue for a lot of other people, including veterans suffering from PTSD and people who are in need of pain management, and a whole lot of other people, in addition to people who just want to use it recreationally. But the question now says this includes marijuana in states where it's been legalized. And again, it's still illegal under the federal statute. And this is the ludicrous part. You can argue it's ludicrous that it's even still illegal. But it not only is it illegal, it's in the schedule of drugs that are at the very top of the list for being the most addictive and the most harmful with the least medicinal benefit. So it's up there with heroin and cocaine and meth. As silly as that is. But the law says you may not lie on that form. And the question is, are you a user of or addicted to? Secondly, there is a separate federal statute that says you may not possess a gun if you're a user of or addicted to an illegal drug. So if you go in and you lie on that question, you really are looking at two different federal charges. And we're talking about 10 years in federal prison here. You're looking at two different charges, one of which is lying on the form. Secondly, it's possessing the gun if the gun store sells it to you and you walk out with it. Now you're in possession of a gun as a prohibited possessor. That's a crime. Lying on the form's a crime. He's being accused of both. Because in his book, he came out and admitted that he was addicted to, I believe cocaine was his drug of choice. I would stand to be corrected on that if you know more than me. But he came out in his book and he did a whole media tour promoting his book. And you remember the quote where he's talking about, oh yeah, I remember sifting through my carpet looking for little bits of cocaine and probably snorted more Parmesan cheese that had fallen off of pizzas than cocaine in those days. Ha ha. And in some talk show, he's making that quote, or at least humorous reference. And so he's admitted that at this precise point in time, he was severely addicted to illegal drugs. So he's being prosecuted. The argument yesterday that Hunter Biden's lawyers tried, it was that he was being selectively and vindictively targeted for prosecution of a crime that just very rarely, if ever, gets prosecuted. And on that score, he's right in the sense that I've seen statistics that of those people that you're filling out the form and he says, essentially, do you have a felony conviction, a crime for which you could have been sentenced to more than a year? And people say no, they get rejected. Or people that lie on anything else on there, no, I don't have a domestic violence order or protection. The people that actually get prosecuted, it's like less than 0.1%. So he had a point, his lawyers had a point, that it is selectively, he's being selectively prosecuted, but selectively and vindictively, he's being prosecuted by Merrick Garland's Justice Department. This is Joe Biden's Justice Department. And so he's essentially saying, my father's administration is vindictively prosecuting me just because I'm a Biden. Does that make any sense? Separately, it is not a legal defense. And I hear this all the time. People get arrested for a crime and they'll say, well, that other dude did a lot worse things than me and he's not being prosecuted. And they think that's a defense. It's not a defense. You're out dealing drugs on the corner and police pull up and arrest you because they caught you dealing drugs. You can't say, hold on, there's another guy on the next corner who sells a lot more drugs than I do. That doesn't make you innocent. You either committed the crime or you didn't. And it's not a defense to say, wait a minute, why are you prosecuting me when you're not prosecuting all these other people? People always, as a defense lawyer, I hear that all the time. Oh, wait a minute, I know all these other people that did worse than me and they're not being prosecuted. That may be true, but the only issue in your case is whether you committed the crime. And that's why the judge at the end of this said that the argument his lawyers were making was quote unquote nonsensical and refused to throw it out. Now, there's a June trial date, I want to say June 3rd, which is coming right up. I mean, we're halfway through April, just about. And so June 3rd, in terms of preparing for a federal criminal court case, is right around the corner. They have yet, though, to make the argument that a lot of us are waiting to hear them make. And this is going to be fascinating as far as how this plays out with Joe Biden's efforts to actually increase gun control and limit access to firearms by U.S. citizens. It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out with the argument that is still to be argued by Hunter Biden in court And I'd be shocked if they don't raise this because it's a legitimate argument, much more so than what they tried yesterday unsuccessfully. We're at the quarter hour. We're going to take a break. I'll come back and talk to you about how really interesting this is going to get when Hunter Biden alleges, his lawyers argue, that the statute that makes it a lie, makes it a crime, a felony to lie on the federal form, or makes it a crime and a felony to possess a firearm by someone, as someone who's addicted to or a user of illegal drugs, when he comes back and argues that that's unconstitutional, which I'm telling you is right around the corner. That gets interesting really fast. That's what we'll go into. We always want to take your calls, 317-239-9393. That's 317-239-9393. Give us a call. Join the conversation. This is Guy Relford on the Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC.
Second to none on the Second Amendment. This is the Gun Guy with Guy Relford on 93 WIBC.
And welcome back to the Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. So as I mentioned, we're about to see something really interesting in this case involving Hunter Biden. Because here his dad, as I always say, our beloved president, is doing everything he can to eradicate Second Amendment rights in this country. In fact, there's a quote-unquote new rule on so-called unlicensed gun dealers that just got announced last week. And I'm going to talk about that here on the show as well tonight. But what's really interesting is that having failed yesterday in court to get this gun charge against him, actually multiple charges for both lying on the form and then possessing the firearm as a prohibited possessor, having failed to get it thrown out because he's being selectively and vindictively prosecuted by his dad's administration. Sorry, got to laugh a little bit at that one. But the next argument he's undoubtedly going to make, and they're crazy if they don't, is that the statute that makes it a crime to possess a firearm as someone who's a user of or addicted to illegal drugs, that it's unconstitutional. And why do I say that? Well, it's because the new test for what is and is not constitutional under the Second Amendment has come out of the Bruin case here from a little over a year ago from the Supreme Court. The new test is based on the text, history, and tradition of the Second Amendment. So text, what does it say? What does it mean? And we've had previous Supreme Court cases, the Heller case from 2008, the McDonald case 2010, that help us a lot with knowing what it means. And as I'm going to talk about in another context later in the show, it protects, the Second Amendment protects those arms, bearable arms, that are commonly used for lawful purposes in the United States. Then separately, in terms of how that right has been regulated in this country, you look at the history and tradition of that regulation, and you look at two particular time frames. You look to the time of the ratification of the Second Amendment, which is 1791, and you look at the timing of the passing of the 14th Amendment, which makes the Bill of Rights, including the Second Amendment, applicable to the states. That's the 14th Amendment, and that was in 1868. So the courts, since Bruin, based on Bruin's instructions, are required to look at the text, history, and tradition of the Second Amendment and say, well, traditionally in this country, including at the time of the founding, and the years flowing from that, and from 1868, essentially after the end of the Civil War, what kind of gun regulations were seen as permissible under the Second Amendment? And can you find an analog, a comparative law or laws that say, yes, this particular law is consistent with how the Second Amendment has been regulated and how that's been accepted by the courts in this country? That's how the test now works under the Bruin case. And here's what's interesting. Already, we've seen bits and pieces. This is the Gun Control Act of 1968 as modified by the Brady Bill in 1994 and other tweaks since then. So you're talking about the big federal statute that, among other things, defined this list of prohibited possessors. So talking about felons. Well, we've already seen decisions that say that nonviolent felons being prohibited from possessing firearms, that's unconstitutional, because if you don't have a history of violence, and if you're not considered to be dangerous, there's not a history and tradition in this country of depriving you of your Second Amendment rights. There's a case right now, it's already been argued, in fact, we should see an opinion here sooner than later, from the Supreme Court, deals with someone who's under a domestic violence order of protection. He was never convicted of a crime. And in fact, he went through a civil proceeding where you do not have a right to counsel. You have much fewer, if any, due process protections that you would have in a criminal case. But he had a domestic violence order of protection entered against him in a civil proceeding in which he was not represented by counsel. And the question is it consistent with the history and tradition of regulation of gun rights in this country to deprive this person, who, not based on a criminal conviction, but just based on a domestic violence order of protection that was entered after a civil proceeding? The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals down in Texas, a court that oversees Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, and the federal courts in those districts, said, no, that's unconstitutional. And the nonviolent felon thing, again, there are two cases right now that the Supreme Court is considering whether to take, that both deal with nonviolent felons. And I've talked about these briefly before. One person lied on an application for food stamps. Another one, 20 or 30 years ago, wrote a bad check to a grocery store. And they both got felony convictions out of that, but they're prohibited possessors. They're not violent. They're not dangerous. And in one case, it was found to be constitutional in the lower court. In the other, it was found to be unconstitutional. Our own Supreme Court Justice, Amy Coney Barrett, one of the more recently named Supreme Court justices, wrote a dissenting opinion when she was on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the federal circuit that includes Indiana. She wrote a dissenting opinion that said nonviolent felons being prohibited from possessing firearms is unconstitutional under the text, history, and tradition test. So now you've got Hunter Biden looking at 10-plus years in prison, potentially. First offenders, no criminal history, you're probably not going to get the whole megilla, but you could get a chunk of time in federal prison for violating these laws. An argument he has available to him, and it's a pretty damn good argument, is that it's not consistent with the history and tradition of regulation of Second Amendment for someone who may on occasion use drugs, but is not presently incapacitated. Because you can find some analogs of, well, no, it's okay to not sell a gun to someone who's drunk. All right, well, that makes sense. And that goes back to the time of the formation. What about if they just drink on occasion, but they're not presently drunk? Are they a prohibited possessor? Well, that gets pretty interesting pretty fast. But get this, if Hunter Biden were to challenge this, let's say it goes up, let's say the Supreme Court takes that case and agrees with Hunter Biden, then, oh no, it's not consistent with the text, history, and tradition of the Second Amendment for us to deprive Second Amendment rights of people who are not presently incapacitated, but are just generally users or addicted to illegal drugs, including marijuana, then that law is unconstitutional. Joe Biden's son will have just made available the Second Amendment rights to potentially hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of drug users in this country. And how do you think Dad's going to feel about that? And I think that's absolutely hilarious. Do I think the court would look for an excuse not to go that direction? I could see it. But it could play out that way. And it's just so fascinating to me to look at the machinations going in, I'm sure, among the defense team for Hunter Biden, saying, all right, you know, our job is to make the best arguments we can to avoid our client being convicted of a serious crime. At the same time, the Biden administration going, hold up, you're going to argue what? And I think That's some fascinating interplay. We're a little past the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break. Come back. We're going to shift gears. We're going to talk about, you will never believe who Moms Demand Action, you know, Moms Demand Action was founded as Million Moms for Gun Control, but they got abused pretty badly on social media for naming themselves that because they were at the time about 990,000 people short of a million. And so they decided to change the name to Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. You never believe who they're quoting. In fact, they played a snippet, a quotation, in their latest promotion for members of Moms Demand Action. If you haven't already seen my post on social media, either at Twitter or X, I guess, or Facebook, this may come as a bit of a surprise, who Moms Demand Action is quoting in order to gain members for a gun control group, Moms Demand Action. That's what we'll go into when we come back. I'm going to take your calls, 317-239-9393, 317-239-9393. This is Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC.